So it's getting hot again outside.
It's almost halfway through the year. This is month five.
You know, I did not think that that it was ever going to get away from the cold weather. April was kind of strange.
It was great.
But that moves us into the month of May, which means graduation and the end of the school year. And for our church family, moving on to a new book. May brings us to the book of Romans as we continue working through Paul's letters. This is Romans is kind of special, I think.
Yeah, it's one of the big books, but it's not the most. A lot of people consider it Paul's most important letter. We can debate that, but a lot of people find it as highly significant.
I don't know if the Holy Spirit intended us to rank them, but I think in a lot of people's minds,
Romans has that status.
Now,
yeah.
Now, a couple of things going into the reading that are probably important to state up front. It is among the longer letters.
Yes.
Like the Corinthians.
Yes.
We just finished with.
Yes.
Won't nearly be Philemon territory.
No.
But I think a lot of people consider Romans to be the hardest New Testament letter.
Yeah. That does seem to be right.
If not that Revelation, but then when you figure out kind of the keys to Revelation, I think it gets a lot easier. And I don't think there are any keys that make Romans easier.
No, there are several phrases in Paul that Paul uses in Romans that are just really hard to kind of work your way all the way down on.
Part of the challenge of it is that it isn't like many of the other letters. Even if we go back and look at 1 Corinthians, for example, clearly he's writing to a specific church. There's this set of problems going on, so he goes with this as an agenda laid out. And Romans just reads differently than that. It doesn't sound like that sort of, okay, here's what I've heard, here are the problems, let me give you these answers.
Yeah, it reads almost like an essay or treatise that he wrote on the heavy subject of the righteousness of God, the nature of salvation and justification. Yeah.
So that may be one of the things that challenges us a bit. We got to kind of shift gears,
right,
and read it. That's a good way to say it. More like an essay, than we would a personal letter, because I think it is more like a theological treatise than it is. Kind of an informal letter, talking to people about struggles that are going on.
And until you get to chapter 16 and some of the addressees, it's not nearly as personal as we've seen in 1st and 2nd Corinthians lately, where it's either literally dealing with stuff about what you wrote me or stuff like that, or dealing with specific problems. Obviously Paul knew, the brother who's having the sexual sin. There was a personalness to both the sin and the restoration.
Chloe's people.
That's it. That's not the case with Romans, though he does know people there. Chapter 16 make clear, there are some greetings, but this is more about straight up teaching.
I think so, and so we need to anticipate that as we tackle the letter and plan on reading it in a different way, maybe looking for some different things. And I think putting Romans in a context will help us with that. So why don't we start with just sort of the fundamentals? We know we have Paul writing, but a little bit of background on what's going on, the circumstances of this letter. It's week one.
Yeah.
Circumstances are kind of our thing.
Right. So in the text itself, as you're reading this week, Romans chapter 15 is where we get some of the clearest clues about the circumstance. When we square what we read in Romans 15, verses 22, kind of through the end of the chapter or so, we're going to put those against kind of the end of Acts chapter 19 and Acts chapter 20, and where we at that where we're at then is we're late in Paul's third journey. Most likely, Paul is still in Rome when he's writing this. Yeah, there we go. Thanks for the map. He's most likely still in Corinth there when he's writing this, as he's laying out his plans, and he makes clear in Acts 15 his intention. He wants to get back to Jerusalem to deliver this financial gift that we've been reading about in the Corinthian letters that he's been collecting. Now it's time to take that gift that we've been talking about the past couple months and reading about, time to take it to Jerusalem and deliver it there. And then Paul makes clear his plans to go all the way back across the Mediterranean to Spain. So this is kind of wrapping up the third journey. And, of course, if you read the book of Acts, you know things don't go well in Jerusalem. Paul does not wind up making the trip he intended.
Not according to the plan.
Not according to the plan. So you know, dare we call it Paul's potential fourth missionary journey, if you want to call it, that's what he was planning, doesn't happen because of what's going to happen in the book of Acts. But Paul's outlined what he wanted to get done here in chapter 15. So he's writing probably from Corinth late in the third journey. Puts us about 57, maybe a year or two before or after, but roughly about 57. So late in the game there. But again, we're reading this against late Acts 19, early Acts 20. That's kind of where we're at in the book of Acts and Paul's travels.
Yeah, I like your tie back to the contribution, because
yes,
that kind of that threads through several of the letters.
It's often forgotten. That was one of Paul's great works that does go through most of, or say most, a lot of his letters, though. Especially that come, now that we're reading in chronological order, that come from this time frame.
Right, right.
This was his great project. Again, and we'll see this as we talk about the content of Romans, where, you know, again, this is more next week, but we talk a little bit more about the content of Romans and bridging some of those Jew-Gentile divisions again that seem to be on this letter's mind. Why was Paul doing that gift in the first place? It wasn't just solely for the financial needs of needy saints. It was to bridge the Jew-Gentile divide, show the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, the Gentile Christians out around the Mediterranean, saw them as brethren, loved them in the Lord. They were all on the same team, part of, you know, the same fellowship, of the Lord Jesus Christ, sharing in the same work. And so, yeah, once again, in Romans, that's going to become part of the issue.
So those two ideas that we trace throughout his letters, many of his letters, the idea of a big idea, Jew-Gentile struggles, but underneath that, this contribution, which was sort of a way of bridging that gap,
yeah,
that's in several of the letters.
Yeah.
And
well, even going back to our very first reading of the year, Galatians 3, right? In Christ, there is no Jew
right.
or Greek. One of the great struggles of the early church, and it's still a struggle today, if we're honest, is setting aside our racial, our national, our language, our cultural differences in the church.
So I think that's something to watch for even in Romans, because I think there at least is a suggestion here that Romans, at least in part, served to bridge perhaps a gap that existed in that church.
That's right.
So let's explore that just a little bit.
Yeah.
So people can think about that as they read.
Okay.
That you did continue to have this struggle with Jew and Gentile, but maybe a unique set of circumstances with this letter in this
yeah,
church.
Yeah, so again, a little bit of the history of the background of what's going on in Rome is useful. If you go back to Acts chapter 18, at the very beginning of the chapter, you'll remember that there in Acts chapter 18, there is this, you know, Luke records that the emperor Claudius expelled the Jews from Rome.
Right.
And that's how Aquila and Priscilla came to Corinth, which is where Paul met them.
And there was an existing church there.
Yeah.
Then this happened.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, so because Paul did not establish a church in Rome. So with the you know, and that happened about AD, it was either 48 or 49, off the top of my head, I forget, right at the end of the 40s. So this letter is almost a decade after that. In the aftermath, you know, when Claudius expels the Jews from Rome, one very likely scenario is something like this. The Gentile Christians are used to having the congregation to themselves for a while.
Because all the Jews have been gone.
Because
for
all
a decade.
The Jews have been expelled.
Yes.
And so, you know, again, just like today, there are cultural differences sometimes in how the songs we like to sing, the way we like this. I mean, you know, you see how this works. And so the Romans have had, you know, Roman Christians have had their own way of doing things for a while. The Jewish Christians begin to trickle back in, and they want to do things more synagogue style, right? You know,
let's go back to the way it was before.
Let's sing in the synagogue style, perhaps, or something like that. And so you begin to understand, like, for instance, one of the classic texts in the book, Romans 14 and 15, you look at some of the specific examples Paul's giving of things that are indifferent to God, and you look at them, they actually make sense to be seen as kind of Jewish scruples, Jewish cultural scruples, yeah. If you look at them and think about exactly what Paul's saying. And so, yeah, it makes very good sense that very likely part of what Paul's trying to accomplish is reducing the friction in the Roman church as the Jewish Christians are reintegrating into that after being gone for a number of years because of the expulsion edict of Claudius.
And I think that's really important to remember as you read the book. Even though it reads like a theological treatise,
there's still
it's still interesting to me that as Paul's writing it, He is choosing to emphasize things that strike me as being relevant to that struggle,
yeah,
and helpful in sort of knitting this thing back together.
Yeah, there still is a real world, real life perspective that he's working towards. He does know something about what's going on in that church. And it makes sense. Maybe, you know, Aquila and Priscilla have stayed in contact with people there. You know, they write Paul. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of possibilities. Again, Romans 16 will make clear he knew people there. And so there's all sorts of possible ways in which he was in the loop about the tensions that existed there.
So I think it would be helpful this week as we read through for the first time to keep that in mind and look for these hints, perhaps,
yeah,
that show a connection to this Jew and Gentile controversy. One other thing that would probably be helpful is just to kind of create some silos as
yeah.
we walk through the book.
Right. There,
fortunately, this one feels a little more structured anyway than
Second Corinthians.
Yeah,
it was a tough one.
So, yeah, that was. Not so much with Romans. Romans
no.
has some pretty clear structure.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And so, in one sense, the most basic breakdown of the book structurally is 1 through 11 and 12 through 15, with 16 kind of being the epilogue of greetings.
Yeah, 12 has that Pauline transitional
yep.
feel where we go
very
from,
much.
I've said these theological things.
Yeah.
Now let me tell you how that impacts a lot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one thing, therefore, to keep in mind, because 12 really does seem to be the break where we go from doctrinal to I don't like the word practical, because I think doctrine's practical, but you know, more daily life concerns. You know, the important thing I think that's useful for most of us, even if you're an experienced Romans reader, a lot of us tend to read Romans chapter 8 as the climax of the more doctrinal part of the book, when the truth of the matter is rightly read, 9 through 11 are actually the climax of the argument. We can talk about that more next week when we do more of, you know, the content of the
What's
book,
the message?
Our typical week two, you know, edition. But yeah, understand, because the change really comes in 12. 9 through 11 are actually the climax. The part that we like to read the least in the book, ironically, actually serves as the climax and capstone of the argument that Paul is making, you know, going back to Romans chapter 1.
Yeah, let's back up from that.
Yeah.
Do you kind of see 1 through 3 as a segment?
Yeah, yeah. Typically, I very much
sense.
Yeah, you know, very much. You know, especially, you know, as much as we know Romans, you know, 1:18 to 32 or so as the, you know, the great, you know, we always go to that for the great debasedness of the world. We're still living in that. The truth of the matter is, you know, that's really the beginning of his outlining the extraordinary sinfulness of the world. He hits the pagans in chapter 1. He hits the Jews in chapter 2, chapter 3. So all have sinned.
Everybody
and come short.
Sinned.
And then what he does is he pivots at the end of chapter 3 with that great line about, you know, he's going to be both just and justifier. He then begins in chapter 4 going back to the story of Abraham.
Right.
And writes, you know, writes kind of the theological deep weeds of how justification by faith works in 4 through 8. And then in 9 through 11, he, and again, you know, we tend to stay out of it because of the Calvinists have made such hash of it. But the couple of key things that he's doing in 9 through 11 is, number one, already making the pivot to Jew-Gentile issues. He's reminding the Jews that it was only by God's grace and mercy they were chosen in the first place. They didn't earn it or deserve it. And on the same token, he's reminding the Gentiles, yes, you've been grafted into the olive tree of the people of God, but don't get cocky. He broke the Jews off. He'll break you off too. So he's kind of putting everybody in their place there in 9 through 11. And then the other thing that he's doing there is, again, he's really emphasizing the gracious nature of God in this. You know, and we need to understand that what Paul means when he's talking about the gracious or merciful nature of God in salvation is not, you know, kind of the, you know, sometimes evangelical straw man of God's gracious covers everything you do, so you really don't have to pay close attention to your spiritual life or how you live, but more the sense of underscoring, we don't deserve this. God, because he is a good and gracious God, has worked this magnificent work of justification, but we don't deserve this, and so may none of us, Jew or Gentile, take it for granted.
Ah, which then goes right back to their controversy.
Yeah.
And hey, you guys are all in the same boat.
Yeah.
You need to behave like you.
Neither of you needs to kind of gloat because none of you deserve this, whether you come to it from the Jewish side or the Gentile side.
I think that's a great way to just sort of mentally transition with Paul as he goes through the different ideas he explores in the letter, which we would encourage you to think about this week as you're making your way through the book. If at all possible, as you read this week, try at least once to read through the entire letter in one sitting. Keep urging that. It really, really makes a difference in how we hear it. The other thing that probably needs to be encouraged here at the beginning is that Romans is a tough book. So don't get discouraged with yourself.
Yeah.
Just read through and note the things that jump out at you and that you see, kind of store those away. And as we keep going through throughout the month, I think it's going to make more and more sense. I hope you enjoy your reading this week.